From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump and his wife Melania on Tuesday visited a Catholic shrine as both denounced violence among protesters angry over police killings of Black Americans. But on Monday, Trump's desire to have a photo op in front of a boarded-up church across from the White House resulted in D.C. authorities forcibly and violently clearing out peaceful protesters gathered in Lafayette Square. The actions have been widely denounced by religious leaders, members of Congress, the media, and others. Joining us to discuss how Trump is using the church to legitimize his calls for violent repression is Reverend Graylin Hagler, senior pastor of Plymouth United Church of Christ in Washington, D.C., chairperson of Faith Strategies and Interfaith Coalition. Welcome to the program, Reverend Hagler.
Thank you, Sonali, for allowing me to be here.
How did you respond when you saw what played out on Monday with the violent clearing out of the protesters who were peaceful before curfew had been declared, and then Trump walking along with his administration officials and posing for this photo op that the White House later released as a campaign-style video? What was going through your mind when you saw that?
Well, there was a lot of anger. Looked at it, and it was entirely a mockery of any faith tradition. One thing that was clear is that he was playing to his right-wing white evangelical base by holding up the Bible. He didn't have anything that was to say that made any sense, rambled on about something around freedom of speech. But what was even worse than that was that he used the military and he used Secret Service to basically pepper bomb and club and push nonviolent, peaceful demonstrators out of the way so that he could clear the way to be able to walk from the White House across Lafayette Park and stand in front of that church. Need to point out, he was not invited there by the bishop. Basically the bishop felt outraged behind him using the church as a prop. And clearly, it also really just confirms this white supremacist Christianity that exists in this country, this Christianity that has been pro-slavery, anti-Black, anti-people of color, anti-woman, anti-LGBTQIA folks. There's a church that claims to be a church of Jesus, but has nothing to do with Jesus, but it really allows a hatred to continue to go forth. And that's who he was courting. And then the next day he went up and he decided to stop at a Catholic shrine, basically to court the pro-life vote. And so it's all has to do with campaign and this guy trying to appear tough and trying to appear to his white base that he knows how to keep people of color, particularly Black people, in their place.
Now, the actions on Monday were justified by Trump and his supporters because apparently they were claiming that it was the same protesters who lit a fire in the basement of St. John's Church the night before, resulting in it being boarded up. As the protesters were peacefully gathered in Lafayette Square. So they were sort of conflating protesters as sort of one big organization, even though, of course, they're loosely organized and, you know, one action doesn't necessarily relate directly to another action. There may be different people involved. But how do you respond to the sense that, well, these protesters deserve to be violently cleared out because they were responsible for this burning of a church just the day before?
I don't take anything they have to say serious. And all I got to say is this, is that this is just a bunch of white folks making it up as they go along. They're protectors of white supremacy in this country. They're protectors of racism in this country. They are really tantamount to the old slave master. And that's the way they look at America, as if America is their plantation. And they can do anything that they want to do. And that's why we got people in the street, because they have basically given permission to all of these kinds of extremist attitudes and extremist forces to go forth and continue to oppress people. When you looked at the cop on Brother Floyd's neck, he's there kneeling with his hand in his pocket as if to say, I can do anything I want and there's nothing you can do about it. And that's the same attitude of that so-called president that walked across Lafayette Park, that he is trying to say to the public that I can do anything I want and there's nothing you can do about it. But we got news for you. The night before, you were hunkered in a bunker in the basement of the White House because your folks, when you were so afraid of the crowds outside. And so you had to try to prove that you were macho and strong. And so under deep protection, protection of the military, protection of military police, under the hail of pepper bombs and rubber bullets, that's the way you walk through the streets. So therefore, you're still afraid and you're a coward.
Trump is now claiming that he went down to the bunker merely for an inspection. He's also claiming that the chemicals that the authorities in Washington, D.C. used against protesters was not tear gas, even though the CDC says that's precisely what was used. And he is demanding, his administration is demanding a retraction from media outlets for talking about the fact that it was tear gas. Interestingly enough, First Lady Melania Trump, who really doesn't say much, and when she does, it's often tone deaf, tweeted on June 1st, saddened to see our country and communities being damaged and vandalized. I ask everyone to protest in peace and focus on taking care of one another and healing our great nation. How do you respond to that, Reverend Hagler?
Well, sure, stick to being a fashion model because there is nothing of any content that she has to share with any of us. And the fact is that people are angry, people are upset, people are in the street. When you saw people responding, it was because there was no response, and there's been no response from the status quo leadership of this country in the whole string of known police murders. And when there has been any action, it's often resulted in acquittal or no indictment at all. And so there is real frustration on the parts of on the part of our community and on the part particularly of the Black community. And so what you're seeing out in the street is a rebellion. It's a rebellion against the status quo. It's a rebellion against murder. It is a rebellion. And also you can see, and I need to point this out, that the protesters are able to discipline themselves. When people were not acting in accord to the discipline, they handled it, and they're handling it. And that's something to say about maturity and also becoming disciplined. And clearly, they're out there on the front lines for all of us.
How seriously do you think religious leaders around the country are evaluating what Trump has done this week alone? I mean, of course, he has been courting white evangelicals in particular right from the beginning, from before he was president, seeing them as critically important to his candidacy and now and to his presidency. But do you think that his actions on Monday and following and in general during the, you know, over the way in which he supported violent repression of protesters, do you think it has moved people of faith who might have supported, been supporting him away from him?
Well, no, that base is there because they really feel that he has protected their interests. He has put forth a kind of a valueless system or value system, they would argue, that basically lifts up their causes. What it has done, though, is that yesterday we had a very large call of clergy who have written a statement of condemnation of the events and of everything that's going on and calling for acts of reform of the police powers and police departments. And so that's also created the kind of strength on the other side as people looked at it and people were outraged. I don't think there was a preacher on the call that felt that anything that he did, and particularly holding up the Bible, was anything great. In fact, they called it a mockery. And basically they spoke to their outrage. So the white evangelical movement is still there, still with them. But it's also a movement, we got to point out, in America, historically in America, that movement has represented the most reprehensible kind of policies that existed. People who could justify slavery, as I said, and preach about slaves, be obedient to your masters over and over and over again, because they believe that somehow the subjugation of people of color is ordained by God. And just like they believe that somehow Israel should be protected at the expense of Palestinians. It's this whole theological framework of race and racism that is afoot. And clearly, we are really calling upon people of conscience and people who are actually theologically sound to help lead the cause and correct the corruption that takes place theologically.
How have faith leaders and their congregants been involved in these mass protests around the country? I mean, what we're seeing since last week is a very sort of organic, a very spontaneous uprisings, not necessarily organized by big groups. There are some organized vigils, but then there's just also spontaneous gatherings. How do you see the church and faith groups in general participating?
Well, this has sort of been happening, and even more so, but there has been a clergy vigil down at St. John's Episcopal Church, which was the church that was burnt out, particularly after the so-called president went over there and raised up the Bible. They've been there to protect, one, the church, but also to be a presence of resistance to the kind of attacks that took place upon peaceful protesters. There's also other churches that are located in and around downtown DC, where vigils are going on, where parishioners are standing out on the street, where people are opening the doors of their churches to shelter people if they need to shelter people. And so churches are really engaged in trying to make sure that they offer support, because they're all upset biblically at what took place. You know, one of the things that we continue to forget is that our biblical tradition, particularly my Christian biblical tradition, also the Judeo-Christian tradition, and even the Islamic tradition, talks about justice, talks about right relationships, talks about all of those things that have been negated by this administration.
So if you are seeing these issues play out, and as somebody who's involved in social justice, obviously the issue of racist police brutality is not at all something new for you. How do you view the current chapter of uprisings? We've seen protests before, we've seen flashpoints before, we've seen, you know, not just the outrage around the killing of Mike Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, 6 years ago, Eric Garner in New York, Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin, which although wasn't a police killing, was really part of the Black Lives Matter movement. But, you know, go all the way back to 1992 and beyond, Rodney King beating. This seems to be the latest chapter in a very, very long battle for police accountability and justice. How do you view this movement? Is it different from previous movements?
Well, I think that there was a particular horror to people really witnessing through video, Brother Floyd being killed, being strangled to death, and the indifferent attitude of that cop that came through in that videotape, that he really just didn't care, and that he really felt that he could do anything that he wanted to do. That's what people saw. People were horrified, and that's what that horror has motivated people and moved people. And people who may not have paid attention to this issue before, I believe, were startled looking at that video as it continued to spread around through the media. And so, in a sense, you know, people are continuing to push, will continue to push, whether this is another flashpoint that fades away, we don't know yet. But one thing that we do know is that as the list grows, people begin to understand that they cannot turn back, that they got to continue to press. And as I press forward for justice and press forward to changing the policies that basically restrain the police, I said to my congregation on Sunday, you know, one of the things is, let's continue to call the names that we know, but let us also look to the names that we do not know, the litany of people that have died, perished, unnamed, and victims where law enforcement had got away with killing of them and extrajudicial actions. We remember them because we know the ones that we know, but we know that there are other ones that really remind us that this is a pattern that exists and a pattern that we must challenge until we overcome.
President Trump on Tuesday signed an executive order promoting religious freedom in our foreign policy and abroad, saying that the first freedom around the world is a moral national security imperative that's fundamental to humans flourishing, and that's to supposedly to make international religious freedom a high priority for U.S. foreign policy. Interestingly enough, Reverend Hagler, a poll just earlier this year of Americans showed that the majority of Americans do not see Trump as religious at all. And yet he has, held these very prominent prayer meetings at the White House. There's photographs of religious leaders in the Oval Office with their hands on him praying. Mike Pence, as vice president, is certainly somebody who's deeply connected to the church, as are his state secretary Mike Pompeo and Attorney General William Barr. So he surrounded himself with men who, say that they're deeply Christian and religious, but he himself doesn't even seem to, on the surface even, adhere to that. People made fun of him holding the Bible on Monday, wondering if he was even holding it the right way or if he had even opened it and read it once in a while. Do you think that we need to have a reckoning in this country of those religious communities that continue to support Trump in spite of all this hypocrisy? They seem to be just using his immoral presidency to gain some political points.
Well, there's a part of American fundamentalism that throws values out the door for the sake of being near power, being near what they perceive as power, because the idea is that if they can get to the powerful and stay near the powerful, they can get everything that they need to get in terms of the kind of religious and theological perspective that they want to impose on the country and impose on the world. So there's that kind of fundamentalism that exists in the country. It is not liberative. It doesn't embrace people. It is not inclusive. It's exclusive. And it's clear that Trump has not one faithful bone in his body, because you can't be so narcissistic and be humble before God. You can't just look to yourself, look to your name, and be humble before God. And if we read the scriptures continue to call for humility, continues to call for us walking humbly, as it says in Micah, says, you know what is required to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. And none of that has taken place or does take place in this administration for these last 3.5 years. It's all been egocentric. It's been xenophobic. It's been white and racist. It's been white supremacist. And it has given aid and comfort to all of the white terrorist groups that exist in this country and in the world.
And it was Attorney General William Barr, who is also someone who claims he's a man of faith, who personally, we now know, ordered DC authorities unleashing a violent reaction against peaceful protesters to clear the space for Trump to walk past so he could have his photo opportunity. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, also someone who claims he's a man of faith, who has blocked a resolution condemning the violence in the Senate. So, you have Trump on the one hand, and then you have all of these men of, so-called men of faith who also have power and who have enabled him. What sort of justice do you hope for in the D.C. situation? Because there is action taking place. There's legal challenges to what happened. And also, broadly speaking, with the mass protests, what sort of future do you foresee playing out with this historic moment we're in?
Well, I think I'm glad you said these men of so-called faith. because and white men of so-called faith. And one of the things that this kind of fundamentalism that exists, what it doesn't do, it doesn't challenge people to repent in the public square, repent in their public attitudes and in the jobs that they carry out. It doesn't require that. So you can be Adolf Hitler, for example, and be so-called a person of faith. You could be a dictator, fascist, and be call yourself a person of faith, because in that fundamentalism, there's nothing that challenges a person's soul to humble themselves before God and to treat each other correctly and rightly. One of the things that we're going to continue to do is continue to push here in Washington, D.C. to get some reforms in place. One of the things that we're trying to lift up as clergy is this whole idea of when someone is suspended for a firearm violation, a cop for firearm violation, for investigation, they should go home without pay, not with pay. With pay is a vacation. That's one way you begin to challenge the way the system operates. And that's only fair because you got a gun, you got a badge. Yes, you can do almost anything you want, but we need to put in place that there's some kind of consequences for your actions, immediate consequences. Those and other things that we're tending to look at, because when we look at the DC budget, for example, there is more money in the police department than there is in healthcare. And we want to balance that out, or even in terms of public schools, we want to balance that out, change that around, make the formula look different.
Well, Reverend Hagler, I want to thank you so much for spending this time with us. Really appreciate your insight.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
My guest has been Reverend Graylin Hagler, Senior Pastor of Plymouth United Church of Christ in Washington, D.C., Chairperson of Faith Strategies and Interfaith Coalition. We've been discussing how Trump is hiding behind the church to justify violent repression of protesters. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.